What number is this, Chip?
Episode 7, with the Royal Flush commentary, Big Al Bigley stops by, and Megan Stemwade tells us how the monkeys helped her graduate from college.
Okay, no, I mean, like, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short, I know.
You're listening to Zilch, a monkeys podcast.
Welcome to Zilch, your monkeys podcast. We are your hosts, Jeff Hewlett.
I'm Craig Smith.
And I'm Ken Mills. So glad to see you all here again, and I know that you're out there listening to us, and we're just glad to be monkeying around with you today, whether you're at work or traveling. We're glad that you took us along for the ride today, right, guys?
Absolutely.
We have a pretty cool show, something that we've never done before, and that is the Monkeys Color Cast commentary. And what episode are we doing?
Royal Flush, I believe.
Royal Flush. And Craig Cohen and Jeff Hewlett do the famously wonderful Star Trek podcast called The Tricorder Transmission, in which they do a scene-by-scene commentary of Star Trek. And they've now brought that to you, the Zilch listeners. And it's very exciting. And you'll be joined by Melanie Mitchell, author of Monkey Magic, and comic book artist and commercial artist and monkey fan, Al Bigley, will be stopping by as well. We have a few other little surprises, like, for example, how the monkeys can help you graduate from college. So be on the listen for that. But first, let's check out Monkey's Mailbag. P.O. Box 9847. As we delve into your comments from iTunes, and we want to thank you all for your wonderful reviews, and you are helping keep this show up in the top 10, and we want to thank you for it. We have one from Ultimate Sin 73. It says, finally, an awesome podcast, chunk full of monkeys, facts, discussion, music, and fun. Having attended every monkeys tour since 1986. Wow, there's a lucky person. With the exception of the 87 tour, my favorite episode is the live one that we did. So that's cool. I'm glad you like that. Yeah, love the thoughtful discussion and the fact that you don't just play the standard album cuts but live versions, etc. And bonus points for adding my bestie Sarah Clark as a moderator. So Hey, very cool. You want to get the next one, Jeff?
Sure. And actually, this is cool. This comes from a gentleman who is very active on our Zilch Facebook group, and that would be Mr. Chad Ledoux. See, I did it there too, Ken. This is his second 5-star review, so thank you again, Chad. Just want to say how much I'm loving the podcast. The topics are endless. Lots of monkeys love here. Check it out, period.
Very cool. Thanks, Chad. We're glad you're out there. Craig Smith, you want to take the next one?
Absolutely. This one is labeled insightful, fun, and generally awesome, which should I even read the rest? That's a real good start there.
That's one heck of a start.
Yeah, be happy with that on its own. Mm-hmm. 5-star rating from Stephanie Torkey, with 2 E's, of course. As a second-generation Monkees fan, I thought I knew everything there was to know about the Monkees. This podcast has proven me wrong. I've learned something new every episode. The clips, rare tracks, and live recordings are fantastic. Commentary from Ken and the guys, including Sarah.
She's one of the guys now.
Well, yeah. Is fun and thoughtful. It's clear they're huge fans, too. Thanks for the salute to Peter Tork. Smiley face.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the salute to Peter Tork. That was fun to do. That was really nice. Jeff, you want to get the next one?
Sure. No problem. Oh, this is an interesting username. It's a monkeys-related username. It says Davies Sleepy Gene.
Very good.
The label for this one is I'll Be True to You. Another 5-star rating. Just wanted to say I love your podcast, and you guys are doing a great job. That's all of us, by the way.
Yes.
You guys, that includes everybody, including Sarah.
That's
and
you.
Melanie. Being a 16-year-old, hey, wow, teenager, being a 16-year-old, it's great to be able to listen to people who share my love of the monkeys and have a wide span of knowledge about them. Must be talking about Craig Smith here. Mm-hmm. You get me.
Thanks
for everything. Well, you're welcome for everything.
That's a cool name, Davy Sleepy Gene. That is awesome.
Very cute.
And since it's labeled I'll Be True to You, I was envisioning this review being sung, and then like in the middle, something like, it's so great to be able to listen to people who share my love of the monkeys, and then back in a song. Have a wide span of knowledge about them.
I like where you're going.
You can cut that out if you wish, Ken.
No, I like it.
Oh, wait a minute. I just had an idea. We should karaoke sing these reviews to Monkey's backing track.
That would be awesome.
I'll totally do that.
No. Thank you, Davey Sleepy Gene. It's so cool.
Yes, thank
and
you.
We have one last one for today. Love It from Shell 9307.
P.O. Box 9307?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
There you go. It works. Thank you for doing this podcast. I love hearing everyone's opinions, and I love hearing things I haven't before. So very good. We want to thank you all for listening. And remember, if you're Cindy Wittick's boss, you want to keep her listening to Zilch at work because her productivity went up by 25%. So
seriously.
Everybody work better and make your bosses happy. And just broadcast that over the phone system at work. That would be cool. You can play our show.
I would listen to it at work to help my productivity.
So, Craig and Sarah, what do you think about us singing our iTunes reviews?
Have you heard me sing, Ken?
No. So it's probably not a good idea, right, guys?
I think it's a great idea. You guys are a bunch of chickens, man.
Well, we might have to do it. Well, listen, we have something that we kind of want to talk about today. We have a very special listener who's out there, and his name is Zach Mortensen. I'd like Craig to say a little something about Zach.
The Zilch Gang wants to say hi to one of our listeners, Zach Mortensen. Zach's 10 years old and is a huge fan of the Monkees, especially Mickey.
Zach has a heart condition called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy and is currently on the waiting list for a new heart. I actually talked to his grandma, who runs his Twitter page, last week, and apparently Zach's been downloading Zilch and enjoys it a lot.
So thanks for listening, Zach. We hope, like the Monkees, we can give you something to brighten your day. You can follow Zach's story at facebook.com/aheartforzach, that's Z-A-K, and his Twitter handle is @aheartforzach.
Well, Zach, we really want to thank you for listening. It really touches our heart that you're out there, and I just want you to know that we know that you're listening, and we're just going to keep making good shows, and hopefully you'll keep enjoying them, and we just want you to know that we're smiling for you, and we're praying for you, and we're sending all of our thoughts and wishes towards you and your family.
Yeah, hi, Zach. Craig Cohen here, and I just want to thank you for listening. It is always great to put a face to our listeners, and knowing you're out there listening and enjoying the show really means a lot, and I'm keeping you and your family in my thoughts.
Hey, Zach, it's Sarah Clark from the Zilch Podcast. Great to have you listening. I'm really glad you're enjoying the show. Please stay in touch and best of luck.
Hey, Zach, this is Jeff Hewlett. You know, we always love knowing that people are listening to the show, but knowing that you're out there and you're enjoying the show so much makes it all that more special for us here at Zilch. And I know that I'm going to be keeping you in mind in all the recordings that we do from here on out. Speedy recovery, buddy.
Craig Smith here. On behalf of myself, Ken, and the rest of the staff, we promote you to an honorary monkey man of Zilch, because all of us are monkey men, even Sarah.
This looks like a job for monkey men. Up, up and away!
And remember, always take some time to monkey around. And now on with our show. So now it's time for Monkey's Color Cast Commentary. And what's the episode?
Royal Flush.
All right, here we go. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Ready. Make sure everybody put your monkey vision glasses on. You guys got your monkey vision glasses on?
Yep. Yeah, no, man.
Okay. Now to go back through time and through space when TV was a lot more fun.
Hey, wait a minute, guys. You know what? It's 7:30, 6:30 Central Time. It's time for the Monkees. I wonder if anybody around here has got a television set.
Hi, friends. Ralph Williams, one of the world's largest...
An island of peace on my stormy little planet of guns.
Holy cliffhangers, Batman.
The Monkees, brought to you by Kellogg.
Tonight's Monkey's Color Cast commentary is brought to you by Reynaldo's Dance-A-Go-Go. Want to learn to swing on the scene? Come to Reynaldo's Dance-A-Go-Go, where our friendly instructors will sign you up for a lifetime contract, and you can dance until you're 80. See you there.
Craig and Jeff here for the first installment of the Monkey's Color Cast commentary, and I know, Jeff, that me and you have both been incredibly excited about getting into this.
Oh, yeah, for sure. This is kind of an offshoot of the original idea we were talking about with Ken, a while back. And
it seemed like a natural progression for us specifically. You know, we've been doing our Trek commentary show for 48 episodes now, almost a year, coming up on an anniversary. So this just seemed like something that was almost a no-brainer.
Yeah, and they're a lot of fun to sit down and watch the episodes and talk about them and maybe see stuff that you didn't notice or some one of us picks out. But we're not going to be alone here. We are very, very happy and excited to bring on to our quote-unquote broadcast team Monkey Magic author Melanie Mitchell. Melanie, welcome.
Speaking of a no-brainer, here's Melanie.
Nice. So, Melanie, you wrote this excellent book, Monkey Magic, that you talked about with Ken on episode 5. And for anybody who hasn't listened to that episode yet, stop us. We'll be here waiting. Go listen to Melanie's interview with Ken. But for those that don't want to stop us, Melanie, can you give us a quick rundown of what your book's about?
Well, it's a book about a TV show about a band, and that pretty much covers it. It is an episode guide and commentary about the series and the movie Head and the two television specials. Important thing to keep in mind is it is not a recap. I don't waste anybody's time giving a scene-by-scene summary of each episode. I figure people have already seen the show. I just talk about the episodes and give a little bit of critique, a little bit of commentary, a little cultural clarification.
Yeah, I've really been enjoying the book. I got the Kindle version. So it's loaded up on my Kindle here. And the one thing I really dig about it is how the episodes are listed alphabetically. So you can sort of just pick up the book, flip to any page, and you're not worried about what season you're in or where in the, you know, the episode order you are. And, you know, it's just a really cool way to get a random episode when you pick up the book.
Yep. It's intentional randomness. That's exactly what it is.
Really, really cool. So the series ran from September 12th, 1966 through March 25th, 1968 for a total of 58 episodes. So that was what, two seasons worth of shows. So, not a long period of time, but 58 episodes isn't really anything to sneeze at. Any general thoughts about the series overall, Melanie?
Well, I think what's interesting is in the course of 2 years that it shifted in style so drastically. Now, if you were to pick up two random seasons of the Brady Bunch, other than the kids getting a little older, you'd be watching pretty much the same show.
Right.
But if you compare the pilot episode, which was actually filmed in 1965, to the last few episodes that were filmed in December of 1967, it's so very different in attitude and formality. It becomes much less scripted, much more loosey-goosey. It's just they really developed over that period of time.
Yeah, and that's funny. That's almost an extension of what they were doing as a band as well.
True.
Yeah. Jeff, any thoughts on the series overall?
Well, kind of to dovetail into what Melanie was talking about, I was trying to think on a level of, you know, what made the show magical for me. And I was one of the kids who discovered it during the 80s resurgence. So I wasn't around for the original run. So the way it fit into the social lexicon at the time wouldn't have applied to me. But I love the fact that it was almost like a live action cartoon in a way. And it just was timeless in that respect. And you had some great music in there. I love the way they tied the music in. And it was just the comedy was so well written and so well executed. It still makes me laugh even now, you know, so many years after I originally discovered it. So it's just one of those series that lives along so well.
Yeah, right on. It's one thing that I really enjoyed prepping for this episode, and we're going to be talking about the first aired episode, Royal Flush, is I probably watched this episode a half dozen times in preparation for this sit down. And the first time I watched it and the last time I watched it, I laughed at all the points that I was supposed to laugh at. And when a joke doesn't get old, that's when you know it's a quality joke.
Something to keep in mind about this series as a whole,
mm-hmm.
is that those of us who discovered it in recent decades, and I'm including the 80s in that term, are not quite seeing it with the same frame of mind that the original audience saw it.
Totally.
Because the original audience was seeing something revolutionary. And for us, watching it today, it's not really revolutionary anymore because it's been copied so much.
Yeah.
And so this particular format and genre has become familiar and friendly, whereas in 1966, when it went on the air, it was shaking the foundations of episodic television. Rafelson and Schneider were really breaking all the molds.
Yeah, that's an excellent point and something to consider when maybe introducing this series to a younger generation of fans. So one thing we're going to do during these commentaries, in addition to, you know, just having discussions while we watch the episode, is when available, we're going to point out what songs were swapped out for the romps, because that did occur, because as the series started, they didn't have a lot of music to use. So in reruns and in syndication, they were able to drop in a lot of alternate music. So when available, we will note the song differences. And then what we're also going to do is at the end of the episode, we're going to have a little fun, and we're going to each individually pick our MVM, the most valuable monkey, and we're going to have to justify our answer. So I'm looking forward to that. That should be really neat. So are you guys ready to get going?
Sure.
Yep.
All right, great. So we will start our scene-specific commentary in 3, 2, 1.
Okay, so here we are on the beach in Malibu, and they filmed quite a few episodes on the beach, but only in that very first summer. Once the show was on the air, they didn't do much location filming at all, usually only on closed sets of the Columbia Ranch.
Must not have been a popular beach day. Not a lot of people around, just Davy and the princess.
Well, it was right at the beginning of June, maybe real early in the morning.
School probably wasn't out yet.
So this was the third episode that was filmed and the first to air. Do either one of you know why they chose Royal Flush as the first episode to air?
No, I don't have a clue, but yeah. I would imagine it was a very Davy-centric episode and just a very good episode.
Yeah, but the funny thing is it really, you know, the one thing I've noticed about TV shows from the 60s, and we noticed it with the Star Trek episodes we watched, is they don't really do a lot to set these shows up.
Mm-mm.
You're sitting down here and you're tasked with figuring out what the dynamic here and what is going on with this band. And I guess the opening title sort of solve a lot of that riddle for you.
Yeah, but you're dropped in before you even see the opening titles. So you have no idea who Davy even is at this point.
Well, I'd like to point out a contrast between this and the actual pilot episode, which was filmed, you know, 7 months earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the opening scene of the pilot introduces the four monkeys as hooligans.
Okay, yes.
Three of them beating up Davy. So clearly, these first few episodes, they were working very hard to show the monkeys in a very positive light.
Oh, yeah.
Showing them being helpful and heroic and very friendly. Some of the hapless stuff comes in later.
Yeah. So Davy was really, one of two monkeys that was somewhat well-known when this show went on. Davy had a big Broadway career, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mickey had come from, a child actor as a circus boy.
Referenced in Gonna Buy Me a Dog as a joke.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, Melanie, you pointed something out about this DVD edition of the episode. If you're watching the DVD, there's actually a minor edit here.
Actually, no, it's not in the opening credits, in the closing credits.
Ah, I'm sorry.
Sorry about that.
No, it's fine. It's
we'll
me.
Get to that.
Yes.
Well, I'll take this opportunity. Since we're talking about music, and I may mention this on subsequent commentaries as well, and I hopefully somebody from Rhino may be listening to this at some point, and I'm going to make a pitch for some monkey stuff that's never – well, they're not necessarily monkey stuff, but it's things that have never been released, such as the incidental music from these shows.
I love it.
There's some great, great, great incidental music from these monkeys episodes, and you're going to hear some right when we come back from the credits here. And I would love to have a CD set of all of these incidental clips.
Uh-huh.
There's some great stuff in there.
Yeah, we're kind of spoiled by the Star Trek episodes where they put out a huge box set of all the music from the original series.
Yeah, I have that. Now, I mean, you can get, 100 clips of, some guy riffing on the bass for Seinfeld episodes, but you can't get this awesome stuff from The Monkey Show.
Okay, if I can just interrupt you a moment to say, why is Davy calling the telephone company to ask where the princess is staying? Why would the telephone company know?
Yeah. And I also love that little gag there where he mentions harmonica and you don't hear the other end of the conversation, but Davy totally sells the conversation, which is really funny.
Oh, not just harmonica, the Duchess of Harmonica.
Yes.
And I love the signs on the walls that are around their apartment. You've got, money's the root of all evil. No smoking or street clothes beyond this point. There's a Humphrey Bogart poster in the background.
I like the sign. The sign right next to the fire extinguisher says, "In case of fire, run."
It's great. All sorts of great little comedic touches just waiting for you to notice them in the background. So I wonder if the same thing, obviously the same condition must have applied to this show as it does to Star Trek. Back in the late 60s, color TV was still a pretty new thing, and the quality of the broadcast that you were watching was highly dependent on many different factors, the generation of the tape that was being played over the air, your quality of your signal, the distance, your actual set. So I wonder how much of the detail in the backgrounds wasn't really seen until, syndication years later.
Yeah.
Or cable TV even.
That's an excellent point. And here is one of the things I really love about this series and it's the first indicator that this series was going to be different, is we had them discussing how they were going to get into the hotel, and then they snap cut to Mickey in his military garb sort of briefing them.
Great gag.
Yeah, I call it a shared imagination.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's kind of one of those almost cartoony things about this show, is that they do live action things that you wouldn't have expected to see in a live action show.
Yeah, and that's sort of what Melanie spoke to earlier when she mentioned that this show was really groundbreaking at the time, and a lot of other shows and movies that followed it really picked up that influence.
There's a reference in the scene to Mike being called W.H. Woolhat.
Yep.
And when she says she doesn't know who that is, they said, "You've heard of wool hats, haven't you?" And, that's him. That's probably an allusion to the real-life businessman F.W. Woolworth.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
You've heard of Woolworths, haven't you?
Yes. Oh, sure. I love how he wants everything monogrammed. So they're stamping the W.H. Woolhat all over the room.
Yeah, a little bit of destructiveness there, guys.
Yeah, a little bit. And they're in the Rich Swank Hotel, by the way. We kind of glossed over that. I love the counterculture references in this show, where they kind of riff on, the upper 1%, appealing to the youth of the time that the show originally came out. There was a large amount of counterculture going on, hippie movement and such. I think it's great that they kind of catered a little bit to that young audience.
Notice that they have a device for listening with four plugs for four different sets of stethoscopes. They've got quite a bit of – that's probably a little bit of Mickey's mad science skills being applied there.
He does come up with some very interesting inventions over the course of the show.
Yeah, it's actually something that they kind of dropped after a while. But for these first half dozen episodes or so, it would pop up from time to time that he would have these mad science skills.
And I really like the matching suits they have in this sequence of scenes.
I do too, and I love this high speed stuff that they do, where they're kind of almost like a montage, but it's a high speed, building of this throne. So they kind of come up with a plan and execute it within a very short span of time.
While he's on the phone.
While he's on the phone, another one of those cartoon type moments.
Ironically, when they need a second throne, they just go out in the hallway and grab a chair.
Drag it in. Yeah, the usurper comes in.
Mm-hmm. And is that really probably where a lot of the improv stuff really came into play on this series, was stuff like that?
Well, I think it was Peter who said that if they wanted to improv something like that, if they had the props and they had the time and it didn't involve, you know, extra setups or extra time with the lighting and stuff like that, they could do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it was just a chance of what question of what was handy.
Yeah.
Now, it's great that they let them be that flexible and they could play around. I think that overall it makes the show a better show.
Oh, totally.
Overall, it makes them much more likable, too.
And so now we have a sort of a dual scene thing going on here where Mickey is doing this great sort of riff on a salesperson. He's trying to sell Otto these different thrones while Davey is trying to convince
him. Here we go. Best thing in the episode.
Peter has a
footstool in the shape of a servile flatterer.
I'll tell you, Peter does so much nonverbal stuff in this episode and over the course of the series, but there's another scene coming up that absolutely kills me every time I watch it, and I'll point that out. But I really, really think Mickey is great in this sequence.
Oh, absolutely. And speaking of the servile flatterer line, I just to mention, you know, I'm sure this will get mentioned over and over, but the intelligence of the writing of this show, it's the selection of the words and the language that they used, it's a lot different than a lot of the writing you hear in shows designed for younger people today. So I think there was a lot more intelligence at play in the writing of this show, which is brilliant in many, many respects.
Yeah, and this episode was written by Peter Meyerson and Robert Schlitt.
I believe that's
it sounds dirty.
Yeah, and it looks like they did some work on Welcome Back, Kotter. And between the two of them, Peter worked on Welcome Back, Kotter, and Robert worked on, interestingly enough, he did some production work, but he also wrote for Matlock and the Father Dowling Mysteries, so... interesting filmographies for the two of them.
Well, I only have two words to say for that, and that's fairy tale.
Yeah, I mean, we could take a minute to talk about some of the guest actors on this episode as well. You know, the Duchess played by Catherine Walsh, kind of a tragic story. Pretty sad that she would actually wind up passing away a few years after this was made. Unfortunately, she was found deceased in her place in Kensington, and they never seemed to have solved it.
Ooh.
So it's an unknown. She passed away on October 7th of 1970, so just a few short years after this was.
All right, here comes the great Peter gag that I love so much. Is he comes back for the towel, and he's got his tongue sticking out.
Everybody does it.
The tongue sticking out just makes me crack up. The look on his face, it gets me every time.
Mm-hmm.
So Otto here is a character we've seen that we saw on Star Trek, Jeff. He was on the episode Cat's Paw.
Yes, he was.
Theodore Marcus.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he was actually born in D.C., and grew up in San Francisco, has a master's degree in classical literature from Stanford.
Ooh.
And he was in the Navy during World War II, got some Silver Star and a Bronze Medal, and a presidential citation for heroics while serving on a submarine.
Oh, nice.
Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, and he's got quite a list of shows he worked on. He was on The Man from U.N.C.L.E., The Beverly Hillbillies, Hogan's Heroes, The Wild Wild West. And sadly, he died shortly after his episode of Star Trek aired in 1967.
Yeah, automobile accident in Hollywood's a shame. He's only 47 years old.
Yeah. So we are now leading up to what I think is the first romp.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct. We've come back from commercial, and we're back on the beach. A little bit of structure here that we started out the episode, beach, pad, hotel. Come back from commercial, beach, pad, hotel.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Never noticed that.
And here we go into the first romp, set to This Just Doesn't Seem to Be My Day. And what's one of the things that's interesting about this romp is there's only three monkeys in it. There's no sign of Mike.
Yeah. You know what? It took me a minute to catch that. At first, I thought Mike and Peter were subbing out on digging the hole.
No. And they don't interact with each other, except very briefly. Mickey joins Peter at the hole. But other than that, they're all acting independently. But I don't know where Mike was that day or what happened to his footage.
Maybe this was one of those days where he was in the studio?
No, they weren't doing a recording yet. Now, the slow sections of the song match up with Davey and Bettina making googly eyes at each other. And the fast sections of the song match up with Mickey running away from the bad guy. And that shows how the film was edited to match this particular song.
Yeah.
Later on, when they swapped it out for a different song, you didn't have that good match. And we just missed an excellent match. At the moment when they came back into the fast section and the film was upside down, the line in the song is, "My whole world is upside down."
Oh, very excellent. Good.
That had to be on purpose. That couldn't have been a mistake.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I actually thought that watching this romp, is it Singmund who's having the bad day?
That's a good question.
But here we have, "My oh my, how sad am I? I wish she could have stayed." Good match.
Mm-hmm.
I love how they mimic that that lift with Mickey and Sigmund in a minute.
Right.
Right here. I love that. It's great.
So, Melanie, this is one of the times where they actually, in syndication and in reruns, they swapped out a song, right?
Yeah, in the summer of 67, during the first set of reruns, they were promoting the album Headquarters, and so they substituted You Told Me for that song.
Okay.
And then when it was on CBS, the song was Apples, Peaches, Bananas, and Pears.
Ooh, very cool.
Yeah, it's funny. We've talked a bunch. I think we've talked with Ken, and we might have talked off-air about it, Melanie, how you want to be a purist when it comes to this, because that's what the romps were cut to. But there are some people that the first time they saw it was as a rerun or in syndication, so their memory of the romp is completely different, and the original song sounds weird.
Yeah. You notice Otto has a cell phone, by the way?
Oh, right.
He's got a phone with an antenna on it.
It's a princess phone. You remember
it's great.
Dave was talking to the phone company. They were trying to sell him a princess phone.
Yeah, so now he's got the first cell phone.
Yeah, this is one of three princess phones in the episode.
Oh.
And the voice at the other end of the phone when he got the wrong number was James Frawley.
Yeah. Director James Frawley, who directed, 32 of the 58 episodes?
Yep. Along with a lot of other stuff. The Muppet Movie, Magnum P.I., Scarecrow, Mrs. King, Cagney and Lacey. Oh, and Craig, he directed the 2000 television movie The Three Stooges.
Oh, wow. Okay. I remember that with Michael Chiklis as Curly.
Yeah, near and dear to your heart.
Well, and speaking of the Three Stooges, we're getting a lot of sort of Three Stooges-inspired gags in this episode. And this scene in particular definitely feels like one of those Three Stooges-inspired or Marx Brothers-inspired...
Wile E. Coyote-inspired.
Yeah,
Wile E. Coyote, yeah.
I love how the whole building shakes when Sigmund's knocking on the door.
Yeah. So what do you do when the bad guy arrives? You let him in.
Yeah, exactly. Planning to cut the safe down onto his head.
Yeah.
But Sigmund is played by actor Vincent Beck, by the way, who got his start in film in the movie Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
Oh, wow. That's a legendary bad movie.
Yeah, it's quite terrible. But he also was on episodes of The Time Tunnel and Lost in Space. Did some commercial work as well. Did Peter Pan and Oliver on Broadway, among other things. And he passed away from cancer in 1984. But 1 year before he passed away, he became president of the New York arm of the Screen Actors Guild.
Oh, wow. And he was also on two additional episodes of The Monkees.
Yep.
Correct. Yeah.
So we'll get to see him again, which is always cool, seeing actors pop up in different roles.
Definitely. Oh, and by the way, the Usurper shows up in other Monkees episodes, and it also shows up in Head after the long title, "Do I Have to Do This All Over Again?" sequence.
Oh, neat.
Mm-hmm. So that throne shows up over and over.
Yeah.
Pretty neat.
So Otto's plan has been uncovered here, and he's admitted to it. So we now know his intentions to kill the princess. And she is being taken away as the boys are held hostage by Sigmund. And this is some of my favorite stuff in the episode.
Yeah, you would think that they might be able to overpower Sigmund, but I guess they're too nice. They're just kind of trying to wait for that safe to fall.
The jumping here really, really cracks me up because they get Sigmund jumping up and down, and you cut to the rope, and you're through this whole scene. You know, you're constantly waiting for that rope to break and that safe to drop down on his head.
Yeah, well, you know it's going to.
And I love that they made Sigmund into the lovable oaf. He's supposed to be a menacing figure, but he turns out to be this kind of, you know, you got Davey reading a bedtime story to him here, and Sigmund is totally gripped.
Yeah.
And they try to tie him to the chair, and then he gets mad because they're messing around instead of reading the story.
Yeah, it's a pity they didn't use the same kind of rope for the chair that they used for the safe.
That's true, yeah. That's some sort of cotton rope. He just rips right through.
Looks like cotton batting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
A little bit of magic there.
Yeah, I love how he tells more cartoon type stuff where Sigmund literally teleports from the chair to the door. But they don't play it off as if it's they play it as if it's real.
Yeah.
Not as if it's something that wouldn't normally happen. You know, like they've seen it happen before.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, he's fast. So never pass up an Archduke with a drink tray.
Yeah, well, we knew he was a bad guy from the very start of the episode because he was on the beach wearing a black suit.
Absolutely.
Yes. So we are leading to the final romp and the climax of the episode. And I know, Melanie, you wanted to talk about the set here because it's probably familiar to a lot of people.
Yeah, it shows up again and again and again. I just wanted to point out some of the identifying characteristics of the ballroom set, just so it'd be easy to spot. There are the fluted pilasters, the squared-off pillars along the wall. There's the double doors and that puke green color. Mm-hmm. Lots of curtains, usually gold, but occasionally other colors. And a stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the immediate costume change.
Yeah.
For Davey and Otto,
mm-hmm.
You know, no, it's not questioned at all. It's just accepted that it instantaneously happened.
Right.
It's great. So during this romp, a minute or two from here, there's something in this episode that absolutely still shocks me to this very day. I think it's coming up here very, very shortly.
The couple sharing the plate of desserts?
No, it is not. It is this moment right here where Davey drinks an alcoholic beverage on 60s nighttime television.
Oh, right.
On network TV.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to
drink alcohol. Later on, he would protest that he's too young to be.
Yeah. You're not allowed to drink your alcohol on on television, on a regular network station. You can't show people drinking beer in a beer commercial.
Yeah.
I sound more shocked by the couple sharing the desserts who go quite passionate, almost to a When Harry Met Sally level.
Kind of almost reminds me of a Magical Mystery Tour restaurant scene where they're shoving the food in their mouths.
But, I think it's interesting that the other three monkeys have very little to do during this romp.
Yeah, I love how
Davey's doing the fight all by himself,
yeah.
Which is honorable, I suppose. But other than this little bit with Sigmund, they're really non-participatory, which is unusual from monkeys. Usually everyone would be pitching in some way.
Yeah. And this romp is set to Take a Giant Step.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For the summer of 67, they swapped out The Girl I Knew Somewhere. And then on CBS, it was Good, Clean, Fun.
Ah, okay.
I do love them walking through the food. That's funny. Here we go. Oh, God. They are just having sex over that dessert plate.
Great.
They even eat the plate.
That's classic.
Oh, dear.
Davey's disarmed. But Peter saves the day here.
With a princess phone.
By doing something that you can't do today.
No.
By calling up and getting the time read to you.
555-1212.
Yep.
And I love how the phone had enough volume to really pump through that whole room.
Yeah. And there's the resolution. Otto gets his comeuppance.
Yep.
He's even got a cheerleader leading the chorus of boos to walk him out the door.
Mike and Mickey have a handshake. That's and great. Then we get what the the end of the episode where we get that little gag with the maid who now owns the hotel because she brought International Steel at 28.5.
28.5.
That's Steel Cabot. We didn't talk about her earlier, but she did appear in another Monkees episode, and she did a great deal of character work in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, yeah. Excellent.
So wasn't there a deleted scene, by the way, that was supposed to be the end and another possible ending for this episode?
Yeah, Mickey and Mike being told to clean up the hotel room.
Yeah.
Episode's a minute short.
Yep.
Gotta fill the time.
I love this here. The a lot of Davey's responses are so funny here. The I am standing up, what he's going to do when he goes home. And then
Mike's hair.
Yeah, and then Mike eventually cutting things off by saying, why don't you ask us something interesting like what time it is, and then it's time to go.
I think Davey's answer was actually looped in. I don't think he actually said I am standing in the original. Close to it, the volume is louder when he says that and the camera cuts away at that exact moment.
Yeah.
So I want to know what it was he really said.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is absolutely brilliant that they put this in instead of trying to edit back in some of the footage that they edited out to make the episode short enough. I think this really humanizes them to the audience. It was very endearing.
Oh, totally.
It's an extension of what they did with the pilot mm-hmm. when they edited in the audition tapes. It's a way of letting the audience get to know them.
Yeah.
So Melanie, now, as I mentioned in the opening titles and the end credits here, there is an edit.
Yeah. Comes right after We're Just Trying to Be Friendly. Mm-hmm. And they took out the slide that, here it comes, jumps right to We're the Young Generation. They took out the slide that has Don Kirshner on it.
Interesting.
Very
and
cool.
Just on this one episode, I don't know why.
Very weird, very weird. So as we're wrapping up, let's maybe pick our vote for most valuable monkey of this episode. And I'll go first if you want.
Sure.
And I'm going to pick the most valuable monkey for me in this episode is Mickey. And
wow.
I say that because for me, the more outrageous stuff in this episode, Mickey sort of involved with. We have the military briefing and the throne salesman. And I think Mickey really, really shines in those two moments. So Mickey's my pick for most valuable monkey. Melanie, you want to go?
You're not going to let me nominate James Frawley, are you?
No.
Darn. I'm going to give it to Davey because he does carry all of the physical heroics of the episode. It is a very Davey-centric episode, and he's on screen much more than the others. I will, however, say that Peter thinks he could have done a better job on the sword fight scene.
Well, I am going to agree with Melanie, and I've also picked Davey for this for almost all the same reasons, but I will add in that he also gave me the biggest shock of this episode with that drinking scene. So I thought that was really cool that they would let that go and show that on network television. And, you know, he's a heartthrob and a role model for younger kids. And to show him drinking an alcoholic beverage in a time that was a bit more conservative than today was a pretty risky move, in my opinion. So Davey gets my vote.
All right. So a 2-1 vote there. And that brings us to the end of this Monkees Color Cast commentary for Royal Flush. We hope you've enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed sitting down and watching it. And we will see you next time.
We have a saying in our country. Unyamat krendo lamaton kaboko sini.
They said, Uyanka kimbo kuomba kumasini.
Thank you for tuning in to tonight's Monkees Color Cast. I'm your announcer, Ghosty Timmers. Now, back to the show.
Joining us on the Zilch Hotline is the lovely Megan Stem Wade. How are you doing, dear?
Hi, Ken. How are you? I'm good.
It's so good to have you here. I know you're a friend and a listener of the show.
That's right.
How did you find the Monkees podcast?
I found it through Melanie Mitchell, the author of Monkey Magic, and then found you all on Facebook. So I've really been enjoying it.
Excellent. And we love your contributions to the page, and just glad that you're part of this. You know, a lot of people will say that the monkeys are no good for you. Your parents, your minister, your kids, who knows, your friends. They might say that the monkeys are not good for you, but you proved them all wrong, because the monkeys actually helped you graduate college.
That's right. I just received my master's in media and cinema studies from DePaul University in June. As part of the program, I took a course on fan studies and fandoms. And in that course, I got to talk about and create projects about the monkeys for a whole semester. So it was just awesome.
This is so cool that you actually got to do this for a credit for a college degree. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was really great.
So why the monkeys?
You know, I have been a fan my entire life. I mean, I grew up with the story that my parents met because my mom thought my dad looked like Mickey. And so when you grow up with a story like that, you can't help but love the monkeys. And then, you know, in 86, when the 20th anniversary reunion happened, my folks took me to see them. And I watched them on MTV and later Nickelodeon. And it's just never looked back since. So, huge fan.
That's fantastic. Do you have a favorite Monkees album?
Oh my gosh. Probably Headquarters, followed by the soundtrack to Head, I would say.
And just off the top of your head, how about your favorite Monkees TV episode?
That's tough. Maybe Monkees a la carte. I don't know. I really like that one. I like all the kitchen stuff.
Cool. Whatever makes you giggle, that's cool. You know. So, you actually graduated from DePaul University, and you have the monkeys to help thank for that. And you,
I do.
Part of what you did was interacting with the fan base of the monkeys. You mentioned something about a wool hat.
That's right. For one night in class, we could dress up as someone from our, you know, the group that we love. So I came in with Mike's wool hat on and got a little extra credit for that. Yeah.
I think I need to go back to college.
Yeah, it was a good time. Yeah.
You made this clip. And of course, you can't see it right now because you're listening to Zilch, but we're going to post this clip on Facebook, the clip that actually helped you graduate. You were studying
media and cinema studies.
Media and cinema studies. So you put together a clip of the monkeys running gags.
That's right. It was my final project for this particular course. And what we were charged with doing was putting together a fan video, you know, based around this. This media text, as we called it, this piece of media or group or whatever that we loved, that somehow demonstrated something key about them. What I really wanted to show everyone was how amazingly funny the show is. I love the running gags, all the little things that show, you know, pop up over and over again in the show. And as I was doing research online and trying to get, you know, all the information on the show that I could find, that's when I ran into Melanie Mitchell's really awesome Tumblr blog, Blue Moon Alto, she's called there. And she wrote all these fantastic synopses of each episode in which she talked about something that they that's repeated, these repeated gags. And I was like, oh my gosh, I love those gags so much. So what I did was sit down with all of the shows on DVD and start cutting the clips and putting them together.
That is fantastic. Well, why don't you introduce your clip right now?
Well, here it is. It's the running gag supercut, and I hope you love it.
Ba-da-dum, 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 ba-da-dum. Here we come. Here I come. Here we come. Here we come. Here we come. Walking down the street. Had the funniest looks from all the people I meet.
Mickey.
Hi, I'm a monkey.
Mickey.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, these are my friends. That's,
Hello.
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 Hello. Oh, wait, the monkey.
Stand up, Davey, show my tall you are.
I am standing up.
Fellas.
I am standing up. I am standing up.
Peter, he's gone.
He's gone. She's gone.
It is gone.
He's gone.
What? I can't think with this bulb hanging over my head. Thank you.
God.
Hey, I got an idea.
What is it?
A brilliant idea.
Well?
That's what we need, a brilliant idea.
Okay.
Isn't that dumb?
Isn't that dumb?
Isn't that dumb?
Well, we're the band. We're the band that Miss Vandersnoot hired for the party is who we are.
Baby! Oh, hi. Hey. Oh. Okay, go ahead. We gotta choose for it. Okay. One,
two, three. I lost.
No, Peter, you won.
Now let's choose, Fred.
Yeah. Ready?
One, two, three, shoot. One, two, three, shoot. One, two, three, shoot.
Let's choose for it.
Yeah, let's choose fingers for it. The odd finger's it. Ready?
One, two, three!
Huh? You have the odd finger, Mike.
Let's not try to work it out.
Now
you take it. I'll take it.
Don't do that.
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 What time is it, Mike?
It's time to go, man. I'll see you.
That is awesome. I just love it. And it's so cool because there's some things that you couldn't quite see because you're not looking at anything, but you can check this video out on our Facebook page. And it's really neat because you've got everything from them trying to get through the doors to the don't do that. The things we grew up with and saw throughout.
My favorite is when they all the little bits of them singing the theme song. So I love cutting that together.
It's yeah. Really fun. And then there's the hello and, you know, all that.
Yeah.
But one thing you didn't quite see is them doing the hand over hand where you get to the top of the gun, shovel, baseball bat, or whatever.
Right.
And the person at the top, I guess, wins. But
exactly.
Everyone just always looked as confused as normal. So I'm not sure what they won. Yeah, it's pretty cool that the monkeys could actually help somebody graduate from DePaul University. That is so awesome. And I'm so glad that you're part of everything here. And it's great to see people do something with the monkeys in a creative way. Any fandom that I respect or see, whether it's Star Trek or Kiss or whatever, it's great to see what fans come up with, whether it be art or stories or songs or just a book, even, you know, anything, or even this show. So it's just cool to be part of the monkeys community and the creativity, if you will.
Yeah, it's fantastic, and I'm so pleased that I could come and talk to you a little bit about my one little thing that I've been able to do. So thanks for having me.
No problem. And any thoughts on Zilch before you leave us?
Zilch is great. I'm glad you guys are here and you're talking about the monkeys in a way with the respect that they deserve. And you get me through a lot of long commutes. So thanks for being around.
Well, we are glad to keep you company and thank you for everything you do and just for the sparkling personality that you are.
Oh, thanks, Ken. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
Batteries to power. Turbines to speed. Groovy here. I love that word.
Me too.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to turn on the Monkeys Hotline and see who we have here. We have what I'm going to call a bit of a celebrity Monkeys fan. He may scoff at that, but somebody who I know outside of the monkey world as well. He's worked for Marvel and DC. His name is Mr. Al Bigley, and he's a comic book artist, graphic artist. Welcome to the show, Al.
Thank you very much, Ken.
So how did you become a comic book artist? Because I tried to do that for a while, and it wasn't the easiest thing in the world.
Well, I discovered comics very young, and I was enamored with the fact that not only are the characters great, but somebody actually drew these and wrote these and colored these, and I wanted to be a comic book artist right off the bat. So at that young age, I had my mind set, and I just kept practicing and working over the years to get better as good as I could. Finally began sending samples off to the comic and kids book publishers. And before you know it, you're getting your first assignment. And then after that, you snowball that into another assignment and one after that. Suddenly you are a professional in the business. I'm making it sound a little easier than it is probably, but I think the lesson there is I just stuck with it and I just wouldn't give up. And
perseverance.
That's really it. Right. Perseverance. And stick-to-itiveness, yes. Those are the keys.
Now, a lot of people might recognize your name, and I'm going to give them a little taste of what you do. I want to play a track that you do some... I guess I just will let the cat out of the bag. You do a lot of great Monkey remixes.
Yes, thank you.
And these are just fun things that you like to do for yourself. You make zero money off of them.
Oh, sure.
We're going to play your version of Mary Mary right now, the Al Bigley remix.
Thank you. This is for all you girls named Mary.
Gives the track a whole new zip, if you will, and it's pretty cool that you do this. What made you start doing this?
Well, there are a few things that factor into it. One is growing up with this music and living with it for so long, you always had those aspects you wanted to accent with each song or pull out of the mix and put to the front of the mix. Like in Mary Mary, you know, we got that great drum beat that I thought should have been used more, should have been more prominent. And the second part of that is we finally got people like Rhino Records giving us the vocalist tracks or the beds for a lot of this material that can be played with. And they give us extra stuff where maybe the guitar is different, maybe there's an extended fade. And so I can work those things in. But a lot of it is just me going, I think that's cool. I want one version with all the cool elements of this song in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is the driving force behind a lot of these.
You also are really huge into monkey photos, and you come up with some really great finds.
Well, thank you. That's something that started, I guess, in the early 80s when I was in high school, was a fellow Monkees fan, Eddie Patterson, had access to the old 60s magazines, which then, I say old, at that time they were only 14, 13 years old, but they were hard to get. This is before eBay and the internet. And I was amazed at the amount of candid photos by people like Henry Diltz, who I had no idea of back then, Gene Trindle, all these great teen magazine photographers. And that continues today. You know, never know what you're going to find in private collections and eBay auctions in these old magazines still. I still acquire them. Nice on-set photos, sometimes nice photos from the studio sessions. And it just makes the Monkees thing more interesting because you can see the behind-the-scenes stuff we never got with just the show or just the records. And that's why I like them, I think.
It's always cool to see what you find, and I'd like you to tell us a little bit about your personal Monkees history, like how you found out about the band, when did you first discover them, things like that.
Well, I'm not a first generation fan. I was born in '65, but I did see them on the Saturday morning reruns, I guess on CBS and ABC later, and it just appealed to me. There was something about it that I can't figure out today concerning its appeal. But right away, I went out and got whatever I could on the Monkees. Again, I'm, you know, six or seven, and my dad brings home from RCA, where he worked, a remainder copy of Instant Replay on 8-track, of all things. And I remember, like, trying to reconcile, like, the fact that there are only three Monkees on the front of the cover, and there are four Monkees on the show, and I didn't even know who Davey was. I'm looking at Mike thinking it's Davey and vice versa. And I soon got the Cole Gems Greatest Hits LP. A lot of the stuff was still in stores. It's only, you know, 5-6 years after Monkey Mania, whatever. And that's it. And then, of course, you segue into 75, and they're available. The show's now running as an after-school syndicated kind of series. And, of course, I remember finally then having a tape recorder where I tape every episode. Again, this is audio recording. VCRs are still 10 years in the future in homes. And just trying to snag whatever you could. And a few years after that, I'd meet up with Eddie Patterson. I'd start going to comic conventions and finding the old magazines, the fact that there were people with bootlegs. Who knew? Who knew there were other people that liked the band even?
Right.
Fast forward a few years later, the 86 thing happens, and everybody jumps on the bandwagon, and you're kind of like, where were you guys? And so it all just goes from there. There was never a time I was out of Monkees fandom. I've always liked the group and the music, and someone like you, who's roughly my age, can remember at a time when there just wasn't any fandom really to look into. You know, you'd go 5 years between all those "where are they now" updates, and you'd have no idea what, say, Peter was doing at any time. You know, and now I think fans are kind of spoiled with this 24/7
exactly
accessibility we have now. Yeah, but that's it in a nutshell, really.
Yeah, I remember those days of going to the library and trying to find out stuff about the band. It was a revelation to me to find that there was even an album like Changes.
Sure. You know? It's funny you mentioned that. It took me, I guess, 15 years of collecting to finally get my hands on the Changes LP. Again, this is before Rhino had stepped in with reissues. That was still a few years later. And that was like the crown jewel. I finally got the most expensive, hard-to-find Monkees LP. And then, of course, you listen to it, and you're like, well, maybe I should have left it alone. No, it's not that bad. I actually like it, I think, better than Monkees Present, but don't want to get into any arguments here.
Well, you know, here is how I look at it. As a Monkees fan, and I'm also a Kiss fan and a Beatle fan, Cheap Trick, and so on and so forth.
Sure.
There was a Kiss video that was put out of them lip syncing for an internet event, and the company that put out the internet event had the rights to it, so they eventually put it out. Right. And Kiss fans complained that, boy, this really stinks, this product's horrible. Yet if that product had never been released, they would have scoured the internets, they would have scoured convention hall tables, they would have traded anything to get it. But since they have it, It turns into, this is something I don't like. So, and that's kind of how I think some fans look at, like, Monkees 33 and a Third, the special,
yes.
Or, you know, as we mentioned, Changes. You know, it may not be everybody's favorite, everybody's cup of tea, but if it were released only in Japan, I'd probably do everything I could to find it. So,
absolutely. You know, I think we just take for granted what we have that's common. You know, you don't miss your toaster until your toaster breaks down and you don't have toast every morning.
Then it's another, like, damn it, I need toast.
Right. Another interesting thing about that whole period was, and how in the dark we all were as fans, is in the early 80s, I'm in 11th grade or so, and I go into my tiny little local record shop that's just opened up in my tiny little town, and I sheepishly take in a piece of paper that says, can you find these Monkey albums? And the guy tells me, oh, all this stuff has been reissued in Japan, and there's a two-album set called Monkey Mania, and I had no idea. Mm-hmm. So next thing you know, I'm spending what was then expensive, you know, like $17 an LP on those Japanese reissues. But I was thrilled to have, you know, clean, recent, scratchless copies. And but, right. But you had no idea. You'd wander into these things. I didn't know the Monkees had their Japanese revival. And, you know, now we know every time, you know, Peter Tork eats a ham sandwich. But back then, forget about it.
Now, we're not sure if Peter Tork is a vegetarian and well, actually eats ham sandwiches. But I'm sure someone will let us know.
I have a picture. I cannot disclose it to the public, but it's a very inflammatory picture. That's all I'll say.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah, I agree. We are very spoiled. as one graphic designer to another, I'd like to talk to you about the various Monkey logos and see if you have any input as to who designed them. I don't know if you do or not. But I find that the Monkees logo proper, the one that we know, the guitar logo,
right,
is just such an insanely wonderful design.
Oh, yes.
Do you know anything about that?
I do have a little bit of information. I've got to agree with you, as someone who comes from the days of designing logos, mm-hmm. before the internet, where you had to literally sit down and space and shape the letters, the kerning, the composition. The Monkees logo, you can almost feel the light bulb going off over the creator's head where, oh, this is great. I can use the last part of the name as the neck of the guitar. The S is great for the fretboard or the tuning board. The K, you know, you had that eureka moment. Mm-hmm. And I've always loved it. It's insanely great. People that don't like the Monkees love that logo.
Well, what's not to love? It is perfection.
It is perfect. Now, from all I know is there was a, you know, Ed Justin, who was behind the Screen Gems publicity and things like that. I guess he went to designer Nick LoBianco back then and said, just give us something incorporating a guitar. Now, I guess this was for Nick LoBianco was a lunchbox designer, I guess for Aladdin. And he just got paid his flat fee of $75 to put it together. Maybe they just needed it as an element on the lunchbox. Like there was an empty space and the Monkees didn't have an official logo, really. And if you look in the book, there was a collectibles Monkees book from 1999, I believe. It has a few of the rough sketches where you can see him noodling with, you know, there's an electric guitar and there's a guitar that just has the Monkees in block letters in the shape. Inside the shape of the guitar. And like I said, you can almost follow the pattern to where he finally goes, you know what? The O fits in great. You know, people think of the circle and an acoustic guitar being about there and the hearts for the tuning keys. I mean, everything just, you know, it just fell right into place and it's just incredible.
And, you know, it's one thing nowadays we see the Aerosmith logo or the Kiss logo or Van Halen. You know, those images just spring right to mind.
Right.
But back then, really the only logo, quote-unquote, that really stuck was the Beatles logo. It wasn't right. until the Monkees that I really noticed anyone else having a logo that became theirs, if you will.
Right. It, we're so used to it now with all this branding that comes along, you know, hand-in-hand with any new launch of any celebrity, any band, any product or merchandise. Another neat thing about the logo too is, unlike a lot of period pieces of the day, psychedelic Peter Max inspired things, it's still psychedelic and warped and freaky, but it doesn't seem as dated. I mean, obviously it's a guitar. Guitars still look like that. You know what I'm saying? It speaks of its time, and yet it's not quite as freaky as, say, you know, the Big Brother and the Holding Company San Francisco concert posters where you kind of got to strain your eyes to read the type and the Preaky logo. And not that those aren't great, mind you, I'm just saying, in comparison.
I would agree. And then you have the other logos, for example, at the beginning of the episode. And I was surprised that they never took the Guitar Monkeys logo and made that part of the TV beginning. But you had that one that was kind of jagged, which, again, if you were just to go with that, that's still a great piece of artwork. It's a nice design, but it never really took. And then you have that original logo that appeared on the first album, which, you know, you look at that and go, I wonder why they stuck with that or moved from that even. But I am really glad that they found the Les Paul Monkeys logo, if you will.
Absolutely. A lot of the other logos you mentioned, it was probably a matter of time. You know, the show is premiering next week. We got to throw something up there. And not that they look rushed, but you know how that stuff is. Like, oh, we don't have a logo. We got a week to go. You know, let's go. And like that. But it is interesting. And I wonder if the Monkees logo is looked on by purists, you know, rock purists, as one more indication of how manufactured and corporate the group was. Because like you said, at the time, here they come, they're put together, they're on merchandise, they got this logo that's on lunchboxes, and it was one more thing to say we're not some organic, quote-unquote, band coming out of San Francisco or, you know, Laurel Canyon. We're, you know, so, I mean, it doesn't matter to me, but it's interesting to look back and look at all these things we now take for granted that back then were seen as very crass and commercial.
Well, I'd like to play another remix of yours right now, and it's You Just May Be the One. Can you tell me why you took this turn with it, if you will?
What I loved about that particular take, that cut, is Rhino finally gave us on Missing Links a lot of the TV-only versions of these songs. Mm-hmm. This wasn't the headquarters version. This was the one we all heard on TV. And I love those because back in the day, again, I just had little taped mono tape recordings from the TV show of many of these songs. That and Valerie and I'll Get Back Up On My Feet and all that stuff. So I loved it. I loved that bass line. I kept continuing that and popping that back up. I love that middle bridge, just all of it. I just pushed to the front all the things I loved about the song, and that's really it. I just tried to keep it lively and just really, really lean on those things that I thought should pop more in the song.
Where's Davey?
A really good one for sure. I really enjoy these alternate mixes. Where can people find them on the net?
Well, they're on my Monkees Remix website.
Monkeesremix.blogspot.com.
There you go. That's it.
And sound like a professional
again,
announcer.
Again, I do these for fun. There's no schedule. I don't do one a week or one a month. It's just whenever I get the time. And some of these take me 3 or 4 days. Some take me months because they have to be put away and then I drag them back out. No, I don't like that. Let's add this. Let's take that back out.
As a comic book fan and artist, can you tell us a little bit about the Monkees' history in comic books?
Well, that's interesting. As soon as the show hit, there was a famous comics publisher of the day. Probably even today, it could be considered the biggest publisher because of their visibility and their output.
Mm-hmm.
They were called Dell Comics, D-E-L-L.
Mm-hmm. They also did the Star Trek and
right.
Tonto and Lone Ranger and things like that.
Right. Most licensed properties were covered by Dell Comics. Andy Griffith, you name it. And a lot of people collect them because they had marvelous covers. And the insides were fine, except they were a bit generic. Like, you could tell some of the writers and artists for the Monkees Dell Comic, which actually ran a little bit longer than the actual series. The comic actually folded up, I think, early, sometime in spring of 69, maybe even summer of 69. But some of the insides, you could tell, like, the folks were not fans. Again, these are probably 30-plus adults. I mean, this is the establishment we're talking about here, dude. You know, they didn't quite get it. They tried to replicate the humor, and Peter's the dumb one, and Mike's the smart, funny one. You know, Mickey's the funny one. You know what I'm saying.
It was pretty much like lesser quality stories of the Monkees, if you will.
Right. But I started collecting these back in the 80s when I was given access to the teen magazines and stuff. And they were very fun to have. And back then, you enjoyed owning any Monkees item because it was hard to get anything new from the Monkees because there weren't any new products. But I think they're worth seeking out. They're still fairly inexpensive for almost 50-year-old comics. Boy, when I started collecting them, they were, again, 13 or 14 years old. Lots of great covers. It got a little weird after, I guess, they were trying to look at the second season. So you had some different artists come in with a little more of a weird psychedelic art style and nothing too freaky. But you can tell these guys still were not very familiar with the show. It's a lot like the famous Whitman hardcover, Who's Got the Button, the Monkees edition. You could tell, you know, they didn't know Peter from Davey or, you know, Mike from Mickey. It's just someone just said, write something wacky and make it, you know, 106 pages, and away we go, you know. Now, also, you mentioned Monkees in comics. They're mentioned quite a bit in Marvel comics here and there. Marvel was the big alternative to DC Comics back then. Marvel was seen as much more youth-engaging, much more hip. So you had characters like the X-Men go out for a night on the town, and they go to a disco, and a band is covering I'm a Believer, or the character the Beast is made fun of. You know, somebody sings, hey, hey, we're the Monkees, to the Beast as he walks by, you know, because he's hairy and have you. So there's lots of fun little mentions like that. A lot of the teen-oriented comics like Archie's line and things like Archie would cover feature the Monkees or have the main characters say, you know, I thought you loved Herman's Hermits. No, it's the Monkees this week. And the kids are putting up Monkees posters. And a few years later, it's the Partridge Family. You know what I'm saying.
Right.
So they really did get a lot of comics exposure in a way. And now there are also ads for the Monkees once they went to Saturday Morning. There's the famous double-page ad in, I guess, 1969 comics that shows the new lineup, including a new show called Scooby-Doo. And
yeah,
at noontime, you know, we're rebroadcasting the Monkees. And, of course, there's a horrible little drawing of the guys from the pilot. But it's there in the comics, so.
Well, do you remember those specials they would have on in the 70s?
Yes.
Were on, like, a Friday night.
Right.
Before the Saturday Morning premieres, you would have some celebrity of some sort, and usually someone attached to the show. Like, there's a really weird one for Rick Springfield fans. It's on YouTube. Brooks and Shriver host the show,
right?
And Rick Springfield comes out and plugs his kid's show, and guy dressed in a Batman costume because they're advertising, right? Super Friends. The '70s were a really strange time.
Chuck Woolery, I think, is Superman.
Yes. It was so strange, such a strange. So you're very familiar. So I'm not the only warped person to try to find.
Do you remember how weird it was to watch cartoons and it was dark out?
Yeah.
Your Saturday morning cartoons are out on, but it's 8 o'clock at night and it's dark. Of course, now kids can, 24/7, you can watch whatever you want.
But. Yeah. Now they have Nickelodeon all over the place, but
absolutely.
Strange, yeah. But Saturday mornings used to be a holy time for us as kids. And to see the Monkees, I remember watching the Monkees, then American Bandstand, and then Soul Train.
Right.
The local broadcasters had that little block.
Right. Wow. See, I grew up near Philadelphia, and this is probably when the Monkees were on their Saturday morning ABC run. Mm-hmm. So I guess it kind of went into, the Monkees went into American Bandstand. And of course, back then, I'm not sure it was still broadcast from Philadelphia Bandstand, but it had that very much, Philadelphia-leaning kind of feel. And they didn't fail to mention its roots and where it originated, and the boardwalk and all that stuff. And so that's interesting, too.
So have you caught the guys on any tours recently?
I did not see them on the recent one because it didn't come anywhere near me, but last year I saw them in New Jersey, and I saw them closer to myself now in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I was very impressed. It's a great show. I love having Mike come along. I love hearing his songs. He's probably my favorite of the group. His songs are probably my favorite of all their stuff, and it was just a real treat. I went to the Monkees convention in March in New Jersey, and that was quite a treat. And again, us longtime fans, if you had told me, say, in 1982, there would be conventions and there would be concerts in the year 2014 and Mike would be involved, and I would have laughed you out of the room. I mean, come on.
Right. And then it got weird around right after 2001 or so. It just seemed like nothing was ever going to happen again.
Right. Well, with the Monkees, I've learned, and I'm sure, I think Davey used to say this, never say never. There is no ending. There is no never. And you and I know 5,000 years from now, that show will still be run in some capacity, and there will still be new fans being made. Mm-hmm. And there's just something about that music and that show that just keeps churning along and grabbing new fans of all ages. You've been to the shows, you see kids, you see literally old people in wheelchairs, you see everybody, every race, every type of person from around the world has been grabbed by this phenomenon.
What do you think makes the Monkees so relevant or fun for today?
Well, I think there are a number of factors. One thing is, strangely, a lot of it hasn't dated. You think of all the much more, quote, hipper bands of the day, and it's kind of hard to sit down and listen to, a Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young LP and, some of the stuff that was just supposed to be so much more of the time and so much more important. It's such a chore to get through now, and it's just good music. Somebody once said, you can talk about pop culture and junk, but junk just doesn't have legs. And this stuff has legs, as we've seen. It has this continuance. And if I knew what it was, I could somehow distill it and put it into a sentence. But maybe what Peter Tork always said about the show is right. It didn't have a father figure. It's young people in charge, and they're having a great time. And they're being creative on their own terms. If you look at that Monkees pilot, they were supposed to work for a manager and report to a record shop, and you saw none of that in the show. You just assumed they were doing this music for the love of it. Uh-huh. And then in the real world, you've got this incredible story of a fake TV show band fighting to become a real world band, which is the most absurd, wonderful thing. And they're a good band. Uh-huh. It's not a novelty. We're going to put out one album and just to see, so we can say we did and it's a novelty. No, it's good stuff. These people really had a voice, a musical voice they wanted to pursue. And somebody once told me the Monkees are one of the few groups, or maybe the only group in rock history, that risked everything and eventually lost everything for the sake of the music. Not the money, not the notoriety. They did this all because they wanted that music to be theirs and to be authentic. And you could even argue that's when things went off the rails. I'm sure that's very arguable. But it's all an amazing story, no matter which way you look at it. The music, the TV show, both together, the real life band, the touring, the reunions. I mean, it's just so multifaceted. And maybe that's it. The fact that you go on Facebook like me, there are people on there, all they care about concerning the Monkees is, isn't Davey cute? Uh-huh. Wasn't Mickey funny? There are those of us, we love the music. We get into the music. I remix it. You got folks just remember the show. It takes them back to their youth. Whether their youth was 1986, 1966, you now see people nostalgic for when the show ran on TV Land in 2002 or something. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's part of it. It can mean if you ask 100 people about the Monkees, I think you're going to get 100 different answers about what they love about them. And it's that kind of thing.
The great thing that I love about the Monkees, whether it's you doing remixing, us doing the podcasting, or someone like Fred Velez or Melanie Mitchell writing their books, I think it's great to see creativity being spawned by something that we love.
True. That's very much a potent subject. Anything that spurs creativity has to be seen as a good thing.
Well, Al, I'm going to have you introduce this next one. It's a little bit me, a little bit you.
I'm like an old-time radio DJ.
Good evening, everybody.
It's 4:47 and balmy, 57 degrees.
There you go.
Well, this was fun because Rhino, I guess on their More of the Monkees set, gave us a nice different version of Little Bit Me, a little bit more stereo separation. But I love that. Gosh, I don't even know what that thing is. It sounds like a synthesizer, but it's not. Those big chords struck kind of after the acoustic guitar comes in. I really wanted to push that around in the song. I actually found somebody with his permission. I used his bass cover on YouTube. There are a lot of covers of Monkey songs on YouTube. Just people playing the bass or playing their version.
Once again, that creativity manifesting itself.
And I just took that with the fellow's permission. I wanted that big chunky bass line in there. I just took so many ingredients and just kind of stretched the song and just pushed those cool things to the front, like I'm always saying. I just wanted to say to the world, have you ever heard it like this? This is the bass line I always hooked on to. This is the drum, whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's really it.
Well, here is Al Bigley's version, his remix of A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You.
Let's go.
The album's good. I'm smashing it, is.
Smashing!
Wayne Newton?
No, man, he could sing some great shit, but he sings all the Sammy Davis songs and
he wants to be a major star, and he thinks he'd get that way by doing what every other major star has always done.
Except for his last album.
And of course, we want to stress that these are not for sale, not sold in any way. These are just done for fan enjoyment.
Just pop on those headphones and give it a listen.
There you go. And of course, folks can find all of these at monkeysremix.blogspot.com.
There you go.
What is your favorite Monkees album and your favorite Monkees song?
Favorite Monkees album would probably be, this is going to be the same old story, Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn, and Jones, because it's just so eclectic. It's the best of all worlds. It's still poppy. It's still, you know, Kirshner-like, but it's also the guys playing a lot of their own instruments, their own material. It's just such a good album. I don't know how else to say it. I mean, there's almost no track on there that would embarrass you. I even like Hard to Believe. I think that's a great track. I know a lot of fans sniff at that one, but favorite song, oh boy, probably You Told Me by Mike. I love his stuff. That one wins. It's just a great song. Plus, you got the idea of it's 1967, and you've got Peter bringing in a banjo on a rock or pop song, which it just wasn't done then. I mean, it's just so amazing. I'll pick that one for now. Of course, next week it'll change. But
right. That's what I always say. My favorite Monkee tracks are usually Pleasant Valley Sunday, Shades of Grey, things like that.
Sure.
I'm always finding something new in the Monkees. It seems like it springs eternal.
Another facet is, if you just look at their music, you've got rock, pop, country, hard rock, soft rock, ballads, you name it, there's something in there for everybody.
Yes, I agree 100%. Well, Al, I'd like to thank you for finally being on the show. It was great to get in touch with you. I just want you to know that I appreciate your talent and your love of the Monkees. Whenever I see an Al Bigley Monkee picture, it makes me smile.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on, and thank you for those kind words.
Do you have any thoughts on the Zilch podcast?
I think it's great. Again, I would have never dreamt that we'd have something so fan-oriented, you know, when I was coming up. It's such a great thing to hear other opinions and other people from the world of Monkees fandom, and it's just marvelous.
Well, Al, I'm going to put you on the spot, and I would like to do an Al Bigley feature every so often, where if we have a few minutes in a show, we could have you intro one of your remixes and just kind of stick it there. What do you think?
That sounds great.
Okay, so be looking forward to, I don't know, the Al Bigley remix spotlight or something. We'll come up there with a cool title or something like, or just use that one.
Another opportunity to talk like this.
Good evening, everybody. It's always good to monkey around. Well, thank you, Al. And you want to let people know once again where they can find you on the net?
Well, my monkey remixes are at monkeysremix.blogspot.com. A lot of my comics and monkeys material is at my pop culture site, which is at biggle.blogspot.com. And my artwork is at albigley.com, albigley.com.
Well, thank you once again, sir.
Thank you. Bye now.
Okay, well, I guess it's time to wrap it up. So,
bye. Zilch.
Cheers.
Take some time to monkey around.
Here we go, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from
everyone. Isn't that dumb?
And that's our show. Zilch is an online nonprofit Monkees audio fanzine made by fans for fans. Any samples of music or interviews heard remain property of their owners. We are not related to the Monkees or any of their members, past or present. We are not affiliated with Rhino or Ray Burr. If you hear anything you like from the band, go on Amazon or iTunes and buy it. If you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm your announcer, Chelsea Epstein, saying always take some time to monkey around.
Not the new Monkees, the real Monkees.